Cleopatra had wanted her killed, but Caesar had other, perhaps crueler ideas. He spared Arsinoe so that he could trot her out like a trained animal in a victory parade of his captive enemies during his upcoming triumphs. Clearly, Saoirse had told the queen who I was and how I'd come to be at the Ludus. And yet she hadn't seen fit to reveal herself to me before the ceremony. Why? The word tore from my lips. Saoirse frowned at me. Why didn't you tell me before now? I tried to keep my voice steady. Before just disappearing in front of me. In front of everyone. Like that. I've been living here in a cell all this time, and it never even occurred to you to let me know that you were still alive. That you owned me. At this, my sister had the good manners to grow flushed and look away. You know nothing of the why of things, Fallon, she muttered. You're right, I spat. I only know I've grown up thinking my beloved sister was dead. She is. I am not the girl you knew. No, I suspect not. I'm sure Father would agree. I saw the fingers of Saoirse's right hand clench. He is well. He lives. I'm glad. Broken and heartsick, as he's been for years. The clenched hand again. Saoirse and my father had been so close. I knew it was cruel of me to say such things, but I was hurt and angry. I never wanted that, Saoirse said quietly. And I certainly never wanted this. What? You. Her eyes flicked back to my face, and her gaze was searing. Here. The words felt like a slap in the face, hard and sharp and stinging. Then why did you buy me? I asked, furious with myself at the way my voice broke. Why bring me here? Well, it certainly wasn't because of how you fought at the auction, she said sharply. I thought I taught you better than that. That Elysian would have cut you in two in another moment if it hadn't been for Elka stepping in to save your hide. We glared across the tent at each other. The whole argument suddenly felt like a moment plucked from my childhood, when I'd once again done something dangerous or foolish, or simply not good enough. I brought you here to keep you safe, she said, because you were somehow foolish enough to be taken by slavers and lucky enough that one of them was Charon. I had to keep you from being sold into a situation 100 times more dangerous. But to do that, I put the fate of every other girl in this Ludus at risk. I don't have the faintest idea what you mean. I don't expect you to. With a huff, she pushed herself up off her couch and strode over to a side table that held a wine jug and goblets. She sloshed a generous measure of dark red wine into one of the goblets and took a long drink before turning back to me. You're not in Derovenum anymore, Fallon. You're here, and there's not a damned thing either of us can do about it. You belong to this Ludus now, and that means you belong to Caesar. And if any of the other Lannisters knew who you were, they wouldn't hesitate to hurt you to get to me. I can't be your sister here. Or anywhere, it seems. She glanced at me sharply. Does he know who I am? I asked sullenly. Your lord and master, the mighty Caesar. Saoirse glanced sideways at Cleopatra, who'd remained silent throughout our entire exchange. I belatedly remembered that the foreign queen was Caesar's consort, but she remained unruffled by my rudeness. She plucked a grape from the bunch on the plate in front of her and popped it into her mouth, her grin never wavering. She seemed to be enjoying herself. He does not know who you are or why I bought you. Saoirse put her goblet down hard enough to rattle the other dishes on the low table. No one does beyond the three of us here and Charon, whose silence on the matter I paid for handsomely. Here, you're just another gladiatrix. And if the goddess is good, no one will ever know the difference. Surely Caesar must wonder at the price you paid for me, I said. I manage this academy on his behalf, and I've yet to give him cause for complaint. And even though your contract is made out in his name, it wasn't his money. I blinked at her. What? I didn't spend Caesar's money. She looked at me, her gaze unnerving in the growing light. It was mine. Well, obviously this life had been very good to you. I can see why you never came home. I fought for every Cistercii tooth and claw. I saved everything I won, and I was going to buy the Ludus Aquilea outright. I would still operate it under Caesar's name, but any girl who fought for me would do so as a free person, no more slaves. I had already pleaded my case to Caesar, and he was agreeable, so long as I had the money. I stared at her. I didn't think a woman in Rome could take that kind of control over her own fate, I said. Cleopatra leaned in. That's exactly what your sister said when I first suggested she buy the Ludus years ago. And truthfully, there are those who would tell you it is so. Crusty old power-mad patricians who balk at giving any kind of power to the weaker sex. But Caesar, for all he is called tyrant, is a man who will listen to reason if it's to his ultimate advantage. Even, sometimes especially, when it comes from the lips of a woman. It's why some of the senators fear him and hate me. Her Majesty has been a great friend to me during my time in Rome, Saoirse said, nodding at the Queen. Cleopatra shrugged. A woman ought to be able to chart her own course in life. Which is exactly what I was doing, Saoirse turned to glower at me, before I had to open my coffers to spill such an exorbitant amount of money on you, little sister. She sighed. I was almost there. Now, it will take me years, if ever, to gather that sum again. I can no longer fight in the games, not with a dim eye and a weak arm. What happened? I silently cursed myself for asking the question. I didn't want to care, but she was still my sister. She paused, her expression unreadable, and for a moment I thought she wouldn't answer. But eventually she said, I attempted the Morrigan's flight during a pageant. I sucked in a breath, imagining the moment vividly. I fell, of course, she continued. It's an impossible feat. The chariot wheel clipped my shoulder and ran over my helmet, leaving me with this. She waved a hand at the scar on the left side of her face. I fought an absurd urge to tell Saoirse about my own successful, mostly successful, attempt at the same maneuver, as if I was still a little girl trying to impress her older sister. It ended my days in the arena, and there's not one girl in the ranks who could draw the kind of purses I did in my day. Her frustration was palpable, like the close, crackling feeling on your skin before a storm. I even had the papers drawn up so that if I died, the Ludus would pass unencumbered to Telestris, so that she could continue my legacy and keep the gladiatrices safe and free. Papers, I frowned. A contract, signed and witnessed and legally binding. I'd heard of such things, but it seemed a very silly way to do things. Vellum could burn, papyrus could tear. What in the world was wrong with a good solid blood oath? Romans and their contracts, I shook my head, angry and confused that Saoirse had stooped to such nonsense. Bits of parchment and scribbling. Yes, Saoirse was adamant. And every bit as binding to them as a blood oath is to you and me. Don't you see? Freedom, Fallon. That's the only thing that's ever mattered. It's why we fought the Romans on our own soil. It's why our Viragus laid waste to his own lands. And if I have to fight now with silver coins and ink and paper, instead of a sword to win freedom for me and mine, I will still do it with a warrior's heart. Why didn't you come to me when I first got here? I asked quietly. Was it because you didn't think I was worthy? No. I stayed away because... She turned her face from me, and the light from the glowing brazier washed her profile in fire. Because I feared you wouldn't think I was. I didn't know what to say to that. Saoirse had never been anything but worthy in my mind, up until that night. I know you think that what we do here is somehow less honorable than the kind of fighting our clans do back home, she continued. But it's not, Fallon. The world is a great deal wider than the fields and forests around Derovenum. You think the Royal Warband was more honorable than the men and women who fight and die on the sands of the arena? Back there, we fought over stolen cattle and slighted pride. Here, I'm fighting for family, for a sisterhood, for you. Suddenly her eyes narrowed, and she shot to her feet. Before I could react, she reached out and snatched the black feather that I'd forgotten was still tied in my hair. Where did this come from? She asked, holding it up between us. A bird, I should think. Where did you get it? I found it on my pillow one night when I returned to my cell from the baths, I said. The same night I saw a dead crow at the feet of the Minerva statue. I watched, astonished, as all the blood drained from my sister's face. She tore the ebony quill from my braid and snapped it in two, throwing it into the flames of her brazier. A thread of black smoke rose from it, and a faint, acrid stink wafted through the tent. Fallon, all these years, you've thought me dead. It would be for the best if you continue to think of me that way. You cannot, you must not, tell anyone who you are. For a moment, it seemed to me as if my sister was abandoning me all over again. But then I saw the look in her eyes and saw that wasn't what this was about. An uneasy shiver ran up my spine at the look in her eyes. It reminded me of when one of the chariot horses would spook at something only their animal senses could perceive. I remember the conversation I had with Kai about ravens and omens, and I wondered if the feather curling to ash in the brazier hadn't been some kind of portent, a warning maybe, or a threat. Promise me, Fallon, she demanded. Either living in this treacherous place had unhinged her, I thought, or there was something she wasn't telling me. Either way, it seemed as if my brave sister had been reduced to jumping at shadows. All right, I said. Fine. I promise. My gaze drifted over to Cleopatra. Saoirse didn't seem to mind the Egyptian queen knowing who I was, but Cleopatra smiled at me, gently this time. The Lannister and I are old friends, she said, and dear, I keep her secrets as she keeps mine. Do not fear me, Fallon. I nodded. For some reason, I trusted her. Understand this, Saoirse said. You'll get no special treatment from me either. You will train, and you will fight. You will be rewarded, or punished commensurate with your actions. Eventually, you will enter the arena, and the goddess willing, you will not die there. The will of the goddess won't be the one keeping me alive, I said. I'm not target practice anymore, Saoirse. Something flitted through her gaze then, a fleeting emotion that I imagined might have been a touch of pride. She blinked and turned away. Tomorrow, she continued, you will go with the other new girls to the blacksmith down at the stables. He will remove your slave collars. You'll still be the property of Caesar, but at least you won't have to look like it. The very thought of ridding myself of the horrible thing made my heart lurch, but then it sank again. I wasn't free. I was still a slave in this place, and I wasn't about to forget that. I wasn't about to let Saoirse, my sister, my owner, forget it either. Chapter 20. If Telestris, with her spear, hadn't been watching me like a hawk as I headed back toward the Ludus gates, I might have made a break for freedom. In the wake of the oath-taking and coming face to face with Saoirse, I was a royal of emotions. The lake's beach, stretching out in a gentle curve to the north, beckoned. I could run. I could even swim. But to what, to where, and to whom? Even if I could forgive my father, and as the days and days had taken me ever farther away from him, I started to think that maybe I already had. I wasn't foolish enough to think that I could make it all the way back to the island of the mighty on my own, without even the swords my sister had gifted me. And then there was my sister herself. Try as I might, I couldn't just leave this place that Saoirse seemed to have made her own. Not before I truly understood what had made her choose this life over the one she'd once shared with me. Now it seemed I shared my life with her, and with the other girls and women of the Ludus Acalia. I'd spoken an oath to it, and if Saoirse was to be believed, I was the reason their freedom was in jeopardy. I turned and retraced my steps back up the strand and through the gates into the compound. Halfway back to my cell, I was surprised to discover that I wasn't the only one wandering the Ludus grounds that night. Good evening, Decurion Varro. Kai didn't exactly jump out of his skin at the sound of my voice, but he spun around smartly. I thought for a moment that I might have heard the rattle of his sword in its sheath. A soldier's training. But then he saw it was only me, unarmed for once. I'm sorry, I said. I didn't mean to startle you. His shadow merged with mine on the path as he said, It's Kai, remember? Kai. I tested it out in my head. For the first time, it seemed to suit him. Probably because there was nothing of the Decurion about him in that moment. He'd shed the dress armor he'd worn for the ceremony and was dressed simply in a tunic and toga. His head was bare of helmet, and there were matching silver cuffs circling his wrists instead of bronze arm guards. The Legionnaire's uprightness was gone from his stance, and he moved with a kind of easy grace. But I noticed, with a smile, he still wore a sword strapped to his waist. What are you doing out in the darkness alone? He asked. I couldn't sleep, I answered truthfully. He studied my face for a moment, then he offered me an elbow. In that case, will you honor me with your company, fair gladiatrix? He asked, a hint of amusement in his voice. I hesitated. That's really what I was now, a gladiatrix. For a moment, it felt as if the collar around my neck were growing tighter, choking me. Fallon? Kai looked at me. Are you all right? I'm fine, I said. I took a deep breath as I slipped my hand into the crook of his arm. If the world insisted that I was now a gladiatrix, worthy of Roman attention that went beyond mere curiosity, then I would play the part. Kai wrapped his hand over mine, and his fingers were warm and strong as we walked in the gardens that stretched between the Ludus compound and the high, thick walls that surrounded it. I would catch proper hell if any of the guards found me alone in the night with a man. But right now, I didn't care. I could feel the tension leave my shoulders and arms the longer we walked in silence. Kai's presence was a steady, calming one. I didn't think to see you tonight at the oath swearing, I said finally. He shrugged. I was simply here in my official capacity. And that is? He smiled tightly. As Caesar's errand boy, of course. You're hardly an errand boy. Oh, yes, I am, he said. My father saw to it that I would find myself in a position that was both useful to him and, to his way of thinking, useful to me. And have you found it useful? I asked. I serve. He shrugged again. As far as useful, well, occasions such as this afford me the opportunity to brush elbows with my patrician betters, even if it means I have to stomach the company of the likes of Pontius Aquila for the evening. The tribune of the plebs, I asked. The one people call the collector. Not to his face, Kai grimaced. He and Caesar don't seem overly fond of each other. Kai laughed softly. You have a gift for understatement, Fallon. The Tribune is here tonight at Caesar's invitation, an invitation he could hardly refuse, and it's positively killing him to have to stand there making polite conversation all night, which I think was Caesar's intention. That and to flaunt his newest acquisitions. Like Elka and me, Aquila tried to buy us, I said, remembering. That day in the forum, Kai nodded, thoughtful. Until the Lady Acalia swooped in with her sizable purse, yes. He has an insatiable thirst for the games, and his stables of fighters are almost as impressive as Caesar's. Aquila is far from rich, but politically, at least, he's a power to be reckoned with. Personally, I find the man and his appetite for death in the arena repugnant. But I'm required to be cordial because my father is an investor in several of Aquila's ludi, one of which is the House Amazona. The other gladiatrix school? The same. Our rival, then. But that means your father holds interests in direct competition with Caesar's. I looked up at him. Isn't that a conflict of loyalties for you? I'm an officer in the Roman Legion, Fallon, he snorted, and the son of a senator. It makes me impervious to moral conundrums. I couldn't tell if he was serious or not. It was irritating, the way the Roman mind seemed to work, and the Roman mouth. Kai, as far as I could tell, could say one thing and mean another, entirely, and he didn't seem to find anything inherently confusing in that. But I will say this, Kai continued, oblivious to my frustration. If it hadn't been for Pontius Aquila, I might never have met you. It was at his request that I was in Massilia to escort Charon's galley. And barring that one moment when you tried to stab me, I found the experience gratifying. I raised an eyebrow at him. Gratifying, he smiled. Extremely. I'd found that Latin could sometimes be tricky when it came to the exact meanings of words. But there was no mistaking the tone of Kai's voice, nor the look in his eyes. I felt heat rising in my face. He found me attractive. That much was plain. But something had changed in his gaze since the first time he'd looked at me on the Legion ship after the pirate attack. I found myself wondering about the place you come from, he continued, about your tribe. I wonder, do they all fight like you do? Are the men as fierce as the women? Is that a polite way of asking if the women of my tribe fight naked? I asked. I'd meant only to tease him, but his eyes went a bit wide, and I wondered if I had been far too bold. I had forgotten myself and spoken not like a slave, but like his equal, like the daughter of a king. Remembering Sorsha's warning not to reveal my real station, I bit my tongue to keep from mentioning it again. Kai didn't seem to notice. Why don't we just leave my thirst for knowledge unslaked for the time being? He grinned at last. The air tonight is too cold for such a contest anyway. For a moment, we just stood there, looking at each other. It was the first time we'd shared a joke that wasn't bitter or barbed. Kai's grin widened to a smile, and he gestured to a stone garden bench that stood just off the path. I followed, and Kai sat down beside me, drifting into silence again. The smile faded on his lips as something else clearly occupied his thoughts. Fallon, I've been thinking, he said finally, turning to meet my gaze. I've watched dozens of men and women speak the oath you swore tonight, and I've seen just as many fulfill that oath on the arena sands. I never thought anything of it, but tonight it was different. Why? I asked. Because it was you. I must have said the words wrong, I laughed, suddenly feeling a little nervous. Instead of laughing with me, Kai leaned forward, his face pale and earnest in the moonlight. No, he said. In fact, the way you said it, it was the truest I ever heard those words ring. And I realize that I don't want to see you burned or bound or beaten or killed by the sword. I laughed again. This was definitely not the turn I'd expected the conversation to take. Surely we were still joking. I was surprised to see that his expression remained serious. Listen, he said. My father is one of the wealthiest men in Rome. I can go to Caesar. He owes me at least one favor for my years of service to him. And I can offer to buy your contract. I could— What? No! I sprang to my feet and stared down at him. You would dishonor me, I said angrily. Dishonor you? He blinked at me. Fallon, I will not be bought and sold like livestock, Caius Varro. Not again. Certainly not by you. Kai's mouth dropped open, then closed and slowly hardened into a line. You know the life you have committed yourself to often ends in death, he said. All life does. I would not have you die at all if I could help it, Fallon. He stood and moved to take my hand, but I crossed my arms tightly in front of me and took a step back. But since I don't have the powers of the gods, I would beg this favor of them. I would not have you die any day soon. Your faith in my abilities as a warrior is nothing short of staggering, I snapped. You're not the only girl in the arena who can swing a blade, he snapped back. I'd almost begun to think that Kai was different, that there was even a chance that he believed in me. But suddenly it felt just like being a little girl again, listening to Sorsha tell me that I would be target practice for every warrior I met on the battlefield. It felt like when my father denied me a place in his royal war band, because he feared that he might lose me, that I couldn't hold my own on the battlefield. Sometimes I wondered if even Mal had simply thought me more reckless than brave. I thought you said you admired my spirit, I said. I thought I reminded you of Spartacus. I did. His voice softened as he took me gently by the shoulders. You do. Fallon, Spartacus is dead because he decided he wanted to live free, and he had to rebel against the might of the whole empire to do it. And yes, he has my admiration. But it does him precious little good in his present state. I only want to keep you away from the arena so that you can avoid a similar fate. I shook my head. You just heard me swear an oath, and with my next breath, you would have me break it. I am a daughter of the House of Cantii. And what does that mean? It means I don't break promises, even ones I wouldn't have made given a choice. And I will not break this one, not even for you, Caius Varro. Kai's eyes flashed. Not even for me, he asked, tilting his head. Does that mean I'm something to be taken into consideration in your decision-making, Fallon? I wished I could take the words back. I wasn't even sure what I had meant. Do not flatter yourself, Decurion, I muttered, turning away from his gaze and shrugging free of his grasp. Silence stretched out between us, and it became increasingly difficult to hang on to my indignation, especially when I heard him let out a low, throaty chuckle. I looked back to see him grinning at me. You think about me, he said. He took me again by the shoulders, drawing me toward him. I could feel the heat coming off his skin. In the cool night, I wanted to take that warmth and wrap it around me like a blanket. I wanted him wrapped around me. I knew I shouldn't. If anyone caught us together, I would most likely be flogged and Kai would be shamed. But he didn't seem to care in that moment. He moved closer to me, and the cloak I wore fell back away from my shoulders. As Kai's hands lightly moved up my arms, over my shoulders and down my back to my waist, tracing my body through the thin material of my tunic. I shivered, and he looked down at me. You're freezing, he said, stepping back to tug the edges of the heavy wool cloak back over my shoulders. But I wasn't freezing. I burned. Everywhere his hands had touched me, the skin was seared as surely as if I had been branded there. He lifted a hand to my cheek, and I felt the rough calluses there, left behind by the countless hours his fingers had spent wrapped around the hilt of a sword. But when he bent his head beside mine, his breath teasing my neck just below my ear, and he murmured my name, I froze. I couldn't see Kai's face. Instead, all I could hear in my mind was another whispering voice. Mal. What's wrong? Kai whispered, sensing my sudden reluctance. I shook my head and squeezed my eyes shut. You're a senator's son, and I... What? I am Infamia. I opened my eyes and looked up into his face. I might as well embrace the cold truth of the night. Even if the Ludus wouldn't punish me for being here, with you, if they found us together, the oath I swore tonight marks me as sure as a brand on my skin. His gaze darkened. You think I care about that? You should. Fallon, I should return to my quarters now, Decurion. You'll excuse me. I turned and walked, ran, really, away from him, before I betrayed myself any further. My heart pounded in my chest, and my throat ached with unshed tears. Even though I'd heard Mal's voice plain as day in my head, I'd also realized for the first time that I could no longer picture his face. I couldn't remember what he looked like. The image of him had been slowly fading over time, and I'd let it slip away, to be replaced by the face of another, of our enemy. What kind of a monster was I? Tears seeped through my lashes and ran down my cheeks, burning with shame. As I made my way back to the barracks, taking a shortcut between the baths and the cook's quarters, I heard sounds, voices coming from around the corner of the grain shed. It seemed that Kai and I weren't the only ones indulging in midnight strolls. I stopped and held my breath, wiping the wetness from my cheeks. The Ludus guards may not have caught me in an embrace with a Legion officer, but I still didn't exactly want to have to explain any weepy midnight wanderings to them. All I wanted was to get back to my cell and collapse on my pallet. But the voices continued. "Does he know she's here?" asked a female voice, within barely a half day's ride of him. A man laughed in reply, an ugly sound. "You mean Mando Brachius?" he said. I recognized the voice and froze. It was Pontius Aquila, the collector. "Is that what he's calling himself now?" the woman asked. "One of his fellow barbarians coined that gem after he won his last bout. They all speak Latin like they're chewing on shoe leather, and it seems to have stuck." "Mando Brachius?" I puzzled through the mangled Latin to arrive at something like devouring arms. A gladiator, I gathered from the mention of a bout. I wondered if those gathered elites ever talked of anything else. "No," Aquila continued. "No, I haven't told him yet. That sort of information could prove priceless when it comes time to bending that wretched barbarian to my will. He's damned lucky things turned out the way they did. No thanks to his incompetence." "It's uncanny," the woman said. "It's fate. That girl will be mine. The gods have willed it so." His voice turned suddenly low and threatening. "In the meantime, you'll not breathe a word of it to Mando Brachius. Or to anyone else. Do I make myself clear?" The woman made a choking noise of assent. It sounded as if he was physically threatening her. I thought to make a noise, a cough or a shoe scrape on the gravel, as if I'd just now come walking up the path. But then I heard the woman bid Aquila goodnight, albeit a little hoarsely. I pressed myself against the side of the grain shed, fearing that they would find me eavesdropping. I feared for the girl they spoke of, the one Pontius believed was his. I wondered if it might be me. "Don't be ridiculous," I gave my head a stern shake. What Kai had said to me earlier was certainly true. I wasn't the only girl who could swing a sword. And so far in my brief time at the Ludus Aquilea, I hadn't done anything to distinguish myself. I was nothing more than a green little gladiolus in the eyes of Sorsha's dignified guests. Girls like Nyx and Meriel were the ones who caught the wealthy patron's eyes, not me. Not yet. Still, it was good to know that Sorsha and Kai hadn't exactly been exaggerating the Roman propensity for secrets and double dealing. I heard the voices moving on, growing faint in the distance, and I let out a slow breath. Let the Ludus owners and their Lannisters backstab and bargain. I cared only for bed and sleep, and maybe a dream or two. I smiled wearily as I loped down the path back to the barracks. I hoped my dreams would be good ones, because in the morning, it was back to the basics of sand and sweat and the sword. But this time, it would be as a gladiatrix in my own right. Not just a maybe, a someday. A would-be, I vowed. Chapter 21. My first day as a gladiatrix began with the stench of blood. "What's happened?" I asked Fight Master Kronos as he elbowed his way through the girls gathered at the edge of the practice pitch. The smell curdled the honeyed porridge in my stomach that I'd only just wolfed down.
"Accident," was his brusque response in passing. "Need a stretcher."
I turned on my heel and ran after him to help. Just inside the equipment shed, there were several canvas stretchers hanging on the wall.
"Take an end," Kronos grunted at me, lifting one off the storage hooks.
We sprinted back out into the yard, Kronos bellowing for the girls to make way. As we neared the arena, I saw the crumpled body of a girl lying in a pool of blood, shockingly red against the white gold sand. She was the one Sorsha had gifted with the sword and shield, with the lion motif at the oath swearing. Her sparring partner, the girl with the serpent shield, stood nearby with a blank look of shock and a bloodied sword. Lion's hand still held her sword too, only it lay in the sand a little distance away from her, the slender fingers still curled around the hilt of the weapon. The sight of it was jarringly wrong. Telestris was on her knees, tearing linen into strips and wrapping Lion's arm as tightly as she could while Crimson spurted in time with the beating of the girl's heart. Her eyes had rolled back in her head and her mouth was open, a low animal-sounding moan coming from it.
What happened? Kronos asked the fight mistress as he and I set the stretcher down beside the injured girl.
The other gladiatresses stood helplessly in a ring.
Fools, she grunted through clenched teeth. Thought they'd do a bit of sparring with their oath gifts. Neither of them has ever held a real blade.
Especially not one as sharp as a blade chosen by my sister. Lion and Serpent should have known better, but I'd also seen how very excited they'd been, and I could hardly blame them for wanting to play like giddy children with their new toys. Now Lion would never fight again, if she even survived the injury, and I shuddered to think what Sorsha would do to Serpent. I glanced at Lion's severed hand and choked back the bile that rose in my throat at the sight of the gleaming white bone sticking out of the end. I looked away to see Sorsha running from the main house, her face contorted and her hair and robes spread wide in her wake. The avenging fury. Serpent went even paler as Elenista approached. When my sister stopped in front of her, Serpent burst into tears. She could have her flogged, I thought, or turned out of the ludus. But then, to my complete surprise, Sorsha stepped forward and gathered her into a fierce embrace. I knelt there in the sand, staring as Sorsha rocked the girl like a frightened child. Telestris finished doing what she could for the injured gladiatrix, and then the ludus physician, a quiet, broad-shouldered man named Heron, helped Kronos get the girl onto the stretcher. They rushed her toward the infirmary as I stood there, not knowing what to do. I felt a sudden spattering of fat raindrops, and then the clouds opened up, pouring down rain in hissing gray sheets. Lightning split the sky, and Telestris shouted for everyone to get inside, that the day's practice was cancelled. The arena was deserted in moments, and still I stood there. The rain was almost blinding, reducing the world around me to a circle in the sand. Just me, and Lion's sword, and her hand. In the confusion, the trainers had forgotten it. Not that it mattered, really. And yet I couldn't just leave it lying there. I stripped off my cloak and knelt down in front of the sword and hand. The rain had washed away the blood, leaving the fingers pale and cool. Spreading my cloak out on the sand, I picked up the hand and blade and shifted them gently onto the wool. I wrapped them up as carefully as I could, exceedingly mindful of the sharp edge of the blade, and cradled them like a bairn as I put my head down and slogged through the now muddy pitch toward the infirmary. As I entered, I could smell the sharp tang of the vinegar antiseptic they used to clean wounds, and my stomach turned over. Lion was lying on a cot, and the neat white bed linens were stained with red. Sorsha sat beside her bed, smoothing the hair back from her pale face, while Heron and his assistant worked to staunch the flow of blood. As I watched, the surgeon wiped his hands on his apron, leaving more red there, and disappeared behind a curtained wall. He returned with a bronze brazier full of angry red coals and a metal bell-shaped tool that had been heated until it glowed. My stomach didn't so much turn over at the sight as threaten to hurl its contents back up again. I knew what would come next. My gasp alerted Sorsha to my presence, and she rose from the girl's bedside and hurried over to me.
What are you doing here, Fallon? She murmured urgently. You shouldn't be.
I brought this. I pulled back the corner of my cloak to reveal Lion's hand and held the bundle out toward my sister.
I didn't want to leave it in the rain, I said. I didn't know what else to do.
Sorsha looked down and then, after a long moment, back up at me. She blinked rapidly and reached out, gently drawing the cloth back over the hand and the sword it still clutched.
That was honorably done, Fallon, she said. I'll take care of it.
She took the bundle from me and then wrapped an arm around my shoulders, leading me out of the infirmary.
Come on, she said. You shouldn't be here right now.
The screams of agony and the stench of seared flesh drifted down the corridor behind us. Sorsha walked me all the way back to the barracks in silence.
You won't send her away, will you?
I asked, fearing that Lion, whose true name I still didn't even know, would be turned out of the Ludus to wind up a beggar in Rome's filthy back alleys.
Weren't you listening during the oath ritual? She asked. We don't abandon our sisters.
For a moment, I thought the irony would escape Sorsha. But then a faint flush crept up her face, and she glanced away from me. I decided to let the moment pass. Some things were more important.
But she can't ever make back the money you've lost in buying her slave contract, I said. She's useless to the Ludus now.
You have such a low opinion of this place. Of me. She looked at me and I saw actual hurt in her eyes. Her gaze drifted down to the iron ring that was still around my neck. I had refused to go with Elka when she'd gone to have hers removed. She told me I was an idiot, and perhaps she was right.
Sorsha shook her head.
I suppose I've earned that.
But I do wish you would at least give the Ludus a chance before condemning it as a place as cruel and cold-hearted as its mistress.
I have to go prepare Antonia's hand for a proper burial. Thank you for bringing it to me. The Morrigan watch over you, Fallon. And then she was gone. I watched her walk away like a queen or a priestess toward the tiny, elegant building that served as a kind of multi-faith temple for all the girls of the Ludus. I could no longer hear the screams of the handless Antonia with my ears, but they echoed in my mind for a long time after. Practice resumed the next day under a dismal gray sky that threatened more rain but refused to pour. None of the girls talked about what had happened the day before, but all of them, even the veteran gladiatrices I noticed, fought their bouts and drills with wooden blades. Within a few days, though, everything was more or less back to normal, with the exception of Neferet, the Egyptian girl with a serpent shield, who vehemently refused to continue practice. Instead, she spent most of her waking hours in the infirmary, helping Heron tend Antonia in the struggle to keep her wound from succumbing to infection. 6 days after the oath swearing, Caius Varro returned to the Ludus Acalia with missives from Rome for the Lannista. But instead of leaving after his correspondence was delivered, he accompanied Telestris out to the yard, where the girls were all hard at work. I had to stop myself from greeting him as he passed by. I knew he was on Caesar's business, likely reporting back to him on our progress. Who do you think you are now? I reminded myself bitterly, in the eyes of any Roman. Caius Varro is a legion officer, and you're nothing more than a diversion for the howling plebs. A vulgar bit of sweaty, bloody entertainment. As much as Sorsha proclaimed the honorable nature of my new occupation, I still didn't believe her. I wanted to, I just couldn't. Especially when Kai strode right past me, deep in conversation with Telestris. He didn't even so much as glance in my direction. I hated that I had been looking in his. But then I heard whispering and giggling and realized I wasn't the only one watching Kai. Telestris shouted at us all to stop gawking and get back to practice. She pounded the butt of her staff on the arena sand, and her fight masters moved in, whips snapping through the air in case any of us needed extra motivation. I ducked my head and went back to my practice routine. In recent days, I had focused my concentration, ironically enough, just as Kai had suggested, on relaxing into the work, on letting the memories stored in my muscles and blood take over, on breathing all the way down into my swords. The less I thought about the next move, the easier it came, until it felt like I was dancing with a blade in each hand.
Gladiatrix Fallon,
Telestris's voice rang out. I finished the sequence, my last two hits landing solidly on the practice post with loud cracks, and turned, wiping the sweat from my brow. I jogged across the sand to stand before her.
Mistress,
the Decurion wishes to spar with you.
I could feel the eyes of the other gladiatrices on me. I glanced back and forth between Kai and Telestris. For a fleeting moment, I thought she was joking. But the look on Kai's face was anything but amused.
Do you have a problem with that, gladiatrix?
Telestris asked. No. I straightened to attention. No, of course not. I nodded a brief bow at him. Dukurian, as you wish. The only man I'd sparred with since arriving at the Ludus was Kronos, the trainer. I felt an anxious flutter at the thought of facing off against a legion-trained soldier. Don't be ridiculous, I thought, steeling myself for the bout. When I trained as a warrior back in the Vale, I would have longed for a fight like this, an opponent like Caius Varro. Gladiatrix, Kai inclined his head, giving no indication whatsoever that he and I had almost kissed only a handful of days earlier. Or had we? Suddenly I wasn't so sure. In the bright light of day, Kai seemed a very different creature than the one I'd strolled through a moonlit garden with. Even dressed in a simple soldier's tunic and leather sandals, and not in a Decurion's armor, there was an air of command about him. And something else, something I couldn't put my finger on. It almost seemed for a moment as if he was angry. Focus, I chastised myself. You're imagining things. I'm afraid I don't know how satisfying a seasoned soldier like yourself will find such a bout, my lord. I grinned as I tightened the leather thong on the bracer wrapped around my forearm, trying to lighten his mood. I am, after all, only a woman. With weak wrists. He didn't smile. Instead, he stalked past me and plucked two wooden practice blades off the weapons rack and tossed me one. There's only one shield left, he gestured to the palmer, one of the small round shields favored by many of the gladiatrices. I considered it briefly, but it was just a practice spar. Neither of us wore any armor. There was no real danger in the exercise, and so I declined. I'll do without, I said. Thank you. I wouldn't want an unfair advantage. Kai shrugged and strapped the shield onto his own arm. I blinked at him in surprise, but he ignored my reaction and picked up his wooden gladius, sinking into a ready stance. I remembered the first time I'd encountered him, how arrogant he'd seemed, and I wondered if the other night I hadn't been imagining things, and if this was the true Decurion. I bent my knees and rocked forward on the balls of my feet, waiting for him to come at me. Kai didn't even blink as he stared me down. There was no indication of where his attack would come from. And suddenly, I was ducking for my life. Kai's blade, even blunted and wooden as it was, would have made a pretty dent in the side of my head if my instinct to move now had come a fraction of an instant later. But before I was even aware of it, I was now crouched in front of the Decurion, having narrowly avoided his blow. He followed up with a second diagonal slash, and I went from a crouch to a diving roll to evade it. When I sprang back up to my feet, I swept my sword in a vertical block over my right shoulder and prayed to the Morrigan I'd anticipated his next move correctly. I had, for all the good it did me. The force of his next slash knocked the wooden blade from my suddenly numb fingers and sent it tumbling across the yard. I glanced up at his face, startled. I was even more surprised by what I saw there. Kai wasn't Kai anymore. Not in that moment. He was Caius Antonius Varro, soldier of the legions of Rome. He was my enemy. Wordlessly, he stepped back and pointed to my sword with his, indicating that I should go pick it up so that we could continue. I flexed my hand and shook it out, wincing as the blood flowed back into my prickling fingers. I felt anger flare in my chest as I picked up my sword and turned to face him again, circling warily to my left this time as Kai advanced. Facing him as warrior to warrior, with the harsh sun carving the angles of his face into sharp relief, I saw nothing of the young man who'd seemed so very concerned for my well-being only a few nights earlier. If it was indeed Kai's intent to demonstrate to the Ludus at large that I was no more than, well, no more than target practice to him, he was certainly going about it enthusiastically, and with an intensity that left my sword side shoulder and arm burning as blow after blow from his blade rained down on mine. Meanwhile, my own blows fell harmlessly on his shield. Don't think, Gladiatrix, he admonished me. Don't hesitate. There is breath and there is movement, and that is all. Now fight. Move. He He was relentless. He was humorless. And while I didn't think he was trying to hurt me, he was definitely trying to beat me. After a quarter hour or so, I no longer cared that I'd almost kissed him. Furious, I realized that a part of me had been holding back, and I gave myself over to the fight. I was a warrior, I was a gladiatrix, and if Caius Varro had come to me that day looking for a fight, by the goddess, he was going to get exactly that.
Are you so sure you don't want that shield now? He asked through gritted teeth.
Our blades had locked up and we were nose to nose, grunting and thrusting, trying to outbalance each other.
I don't like hiding behind things, I grunted back. It feels like cheating.
Except I was about to do just that. Cheat. As we strained against one another, leaning heavily on our swords, I let my focus drift off to one side of the courtyard and let out a little gasp. I was shocked when that oldest of ruses actually worked. Kai's gaze flicked over, following mine, and the pressure eased off my sword for the briefest of instants. I assumed he'd seen right through my little trick and was mocking me, ready to dance away from my blade. With a cry, I wound up with all the strength I could muster and delivered a slashing blow to his exposed flank. I heard his rib crack like the slap of a hard-shot arrow.
Kai dropped to one knee in the sand with a cry of pain. The fight masters were on us in a flash.
Telestris shoved me out of the way, warning me with her Rudis staff to stay back. I was stunned that my laughably obvious attempt at misdirection had worked. I glanced up and realized it was because there actually was something unexpected in the shadows at the edge of the pitch. For the first time since the accident, Antonia was out of the infirmary. She sat ghastly pale in a chair well back from the edge of the practice enclosure. Her right arm lay cradled in her lap, heavily bandaged. The strips of linen, dark and discolored, from the stubborn seepage of blood and from Heron's salves. I felt my face redden with shame. If I'd known she was sitting there watching, I never would have tried to trick Kai like that. I would have to apologize, I thought, and try to explain.
You really don't like that boy, do you?
Elka said, strolling over to stand beside me, as Kronos helped Kai stand. Elka had her practice spear slung over one shoulder and a satisfied grin on her face as she watched the Decurion stagger painfully to his feet.
Wonder how it feels for the Legion to be on the receiving end for once?
I didn't answer her. Once, not so long ago, I would have laughed right along with my Verini friend, two girls from two tribes that had both felt the hobnailed tread of the Legion's sandaled foot. But in that moment, all I could feel was the shock of my blade slamming into Kai's ribs. If we'd been using real swords, he'd be dead, and I would have killed him.
Have you really thought about what it means to be a warrior, Fallon? Sorsha had once asked me.
It means you kill. You kill men. You kill women. All while they are trying very hard to kill you. And if one of them is better at it than you die.
Conflicting emotions of savage triumph and regret tore at my heart. I wondered what Aiden had felt in the instant when his blade sank into his brother's flesh. Elation? Satisfaction? I shuddered and pushed the memory away.
That was well done, Gladiolus.
I turned to see Nick standing there, looking in the direction Kai had gone.
That Decurion is an arrogant ass, she said. Maybe now he'll understand that even the lowliest gladiatrix is worth being wary of.
She slapped me on the back, a blow that fell somewhere between hearty and pummeling, and shouldered past Elka to join the rest of the veteran students gathered at the far end of the pitch. I watched as Kai moved stiffly toward the infirmary with the help of a trainer. I looked down at the wooden sword still clutched in my hand. It felt heavier than lead. I handed it to Elka, who took it with an amused shake of her head. It was time for the midday meal break, but I found myself without an appetite. Instead, I headed to the baths and immersed myself in the cold pool, scrubbing savagely at the dust and sweat caked on my skin. My stomach was churning with emotions as I dressed and combed my fingers through my damp hair, pulling it back into a loose plait. Then, for the second time in only a handful of days, I found myself standing inside the door of the infirmary. Heron was just on his way out, and he paused to offer me a wan smile and a pat on the shoulder.
"In the arena," he murmured. "That blow would have won you the adoration of the crowd, you know."
I nodded my thanks. He was right. What I'd done in practice was the very thing I'd been trained to do in a bout. Why then did I feel so bad for having done it? Heron pulled the door shut behind him, leaving only me and his most recent patient alone in the room. Kai was sitting on the end of one of the cots, his clothes stripped away except for a length of linen wrapped around his hips like a kilt, and more linen, strips of it, wrapped tightly around his torso. As I approached, I tried not to notice the lean, defined muscles of his chest and arms. He didn't look at me as I sat down on the low stool in front of him.
"Broken?"
I asked. He shifted, wincing.
"I'm sorry," I said. "I didn't mean for that trick to really work. I didn't think it had."
He shook his head.
"Cracked? It'll heal. And it was well deserved, anyhow. Even if you'd broken my rib in half. My behavior was inexcusable. And I beg your pardon, Gladiatrix."
His apology confirmed what I'd begun to suspect.
"You mean your attempt to teach me a lesson?"
I asked quietly. He didn't answer.
"This is about Antonio."